You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
So I want to share with you a little bit of audio here from a North Carolina pastor who is calling for the extermination of all gays and lesbians by locking them off behind an electric fence and waiting for them all to die. His name is Charles Worley, and he's with the Providence Road Baptist Church out here in Maiden, North Carolina. Ah! And he's figured out a way to get rid of all them lesbians and queers.
Our president getting up and saying that it was all right for two women to marry or two men to marry. I tell you right now, I was disappointed bad. But I tell you right there, as sorry as you can get, the Bible's against it, God's against it, I'm against it, and if you've got any sense, you're against it. I had a way, I figured a way out, a way to get rid of all lesbians and queers, but I couldn't get it past the Congress. Build a great, big, large fence, 50 or 100 mile long, put all the lesbians in there, fly over and drop some food. Do the same thing with the queers and the homosexuals. And have that fence electrified till they can't get out. Feed them. And you know what? In a few years, they'll die out.
Yeah.
Do you know why they can't reproduce? If a man ever has a young'un, praise God, he'll be the first one. All of these. You know, this world, amen, I'm going to preach the hell out of all of us. Hey, I tell you right now, somebody said, who you going to vote for? I ain't going to vote for a baby killer and a homosexual lover. You said, did you mean to say that? You better believe I did. God have mercy. It makes me puking sick to think about. I don't even know whether you ought to say this in the pulpit or not. Could you imagine kissing some man?
Jesus turned to Judas and kissed him.
You're saying Jesus was a queer, aren't you there, Reverend? Jesus and Judas were queers, weren't they? Let's put old Jesus back there behind the electrified fence because the Bible's against it. I'm against it. Your mama's against it. Your grandpappy's dog is against it.
So there's your proof. Jesus was a homosexual and his lover was Judas. And apparently Judas got pissed off about something, and you know how jealous lovers can just, ooh, Lord have mercy. So Judas kissed him on the mouth.
Angry Indian Radio. You are listening to the Angry Indian Unintelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Stand up and fight for indigenous rights.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Indian land!
You guys have no jurisdiction here. Indian
land! You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Real talk for the fourth world.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? And how did he take it? What gun did you speak? Where is your history? How did a man wipe out your history?
How did the man, what did the man do to make you as dumb as you are right now?
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
All Indians, all over the land, all saying the same thing. This is our homeland. This is our birthright. They don't want any white man comes in here and tell us that you have to divide this up this way or that way. The white man doesn't own this land. Just because he has a gun, he said, I took your land.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Transmitting from within the occupied Aboriginal territories of North America to the people of the Fourth World and all ships at sea. This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
Internet radio for smart original.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
This is Radio Intelligente Indigena.
To the phones. Mark is in Chicago listening on XM. Hey, Mark.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. It's just that I hope I can get my point out before I get jumped on, too, because I think you got a great show, but I guess we have to agree to disagree about some things.
What's that?
Well, it deals with homosexuality.
Are you gay?
No, absolutely not. Are you?
No, but okay. I just wonder from what point of view you're going to take. I think you're going to do some gay bashing, right?
Absolutely not. That's not in my nature, but I am going to express my viewpoint on it, if I could.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I personally don't have anything against people who are homosexuals, females or males. I am talking on behalf of children and the take that it would have on me. Just imagine your kid. If you have a child, I'm sure you do. And if he's still a kid, who do he look up to? He look up to his dad. He want to be like who? His dad. And what I'm simply saying is that people who are gay, I don't believe in my heart that a large percentage of them want to be gay. I don't think anybody wants to be bashed or talked about or ridiculed, and no more than the kids.
Well, but that's not up to gay folk, Mark. That's up to heterosexuals to stop bashing them.
Absolutely, but that my point is not with heterosexual or gay people. It involves the children.
Oh, no.
Wait a minute.
But no, don't tell me to wait a minute, sir. This is my program. You have come into my house. You will follow my rules or I'll hang up on you. So don't tell me to wait a minute. Are you clear on that?
I'm not scared of you, Mike.
All right, goodbye. Adios. No, it's not about being scared. It's about being polite. It's about you're coming into my house. I don't come into your house and start telling you this, that, and the other thing. Listen, you right-wingers have got to get something straight. God damn it, we're just not going to ever put you on this program. You are coming into my program, my place of work. This is what I do for a living. You will come in here respectfully, or you will not come in. It's very simple. And once I find out that you're here under false pretenses, your ass gets disconnected and you don't ever get back on this program again.
Este es Aborigen Inteligente de Radio.
Internet radio for smart aboriginals.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Transmitting to the people of the Fourth World from within occupied North America, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Salutan and peace to all original human beings resident on the physical plane. I'm your host, Angry Indian, Editor-in-Chief of the Aboriginal Press News Service, blogging to the Fourth World from aboriginalpress.tumblr.com and aboriginalpress.wordpress.com and ang-newswire.blogspot.com. And you have tuned in to Indigenous News, Thought, and Analyses concerning the issues that matter to original peoples and other communities across the world living under imperial, theological, racist, neoclassist, neocolonialist, neoliberal, and neo-fascist control. I wish you all welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome along. Shout out to the gods and earths and peace to the original family of this type of struggle. This is the Angry Indian, and today we're going to be speaking to Carlos from D.C. He is an activist. He identifies as Peruvian and African, and you know how that matters to me, because we don't hear from too many of our Afro-Indian brothers and sisters on either side of the Rio Grande. And we tend to consider that when we talk about America, we're only talking about North America, right? And even then, we're not even talking about all of, you know, the entire continent. You know, we miss this. And this is, you know, an individual that is bringing that together. And, you know, he lives right in the heart of the nation's capital in the United States, in Washington, D.C. So we're going to be talking about a few things in terms of gender issues, bias and discrimination, immigration, and, you know, all of the things that I don't feel qualified to talk about sometimes. Because, you know, I mean, I read the news, and like you, I get frustrated. I get frustrated. I see so much injustice. I see so much injustice, and I see so much hatred. And then when we think about those of us who are not white, you know, we know what it is. When we have, when you're a member of a religious minority, an ethnic minority, you understand what it is. And then you have, you know, sexual orientation, and that is another minority. And then you have on top of that gender issue. And when you combine all of those things into an individual, and I'm not just talking about my guests, we have many people that are coming from various countries, not just from Spanish-speaking indigenous countries in the Americas, but from around the world, that are trying to find sanctuary in the United States or in Canada or in Australia, New Zealand, or what have you, sometimes the UK, the Republic of Ireland. Because they're trying to get away from violence against homosexuals, against people who are in transition sometimes, you know, in between genders. If for the indigenous community in the United States and Canada, we identified this as two-spirit. It's not an accurate term. It's not a necessarily a fair term, but it's a way for a lot of us to deal with people who are not indigenous, who do not belong to this community. How to understand the fact that we recognize anywhere from two to sometimes eight genders, depending on the nation that you're talking about. And it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with homosexuality. We're talking about the spirit. And, you know, when someone is in between like that, you know, it gives them a certain power, it gives them a certain strength. And indigenous people before colonization, we understood that these were some of the strongest people, that these were some of the visionaries and the seers in our communities. And this is exactly why the religious elites came in and made sure, especially coming through Panama, they made sure that the two-spirited people were put down, that the strength, that the circle would be broken. Now, I don't want to go on too much about that because there's so many things that we can talk about today. But Carlos from D.C., welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Hello, Abiyomi. Thank you for having me on your show. This is going to be a very interesting experience. I'm ready to talk to you, or any questions that you might have.
Okay, then that can be just about anything. Why don't you give our listeners your website address and everything else that you're doing online?
Yes, as part of my transitioning process, everything is going to change with my online work. Whatever I posted there is going to remain there. But as you know, Carlos, as a person, is changing. And Carlos, at some point, is not going to be there anymore. So I'm planning on using the name Camila in the future. I'm not going to be active online as much because it's something that takes a lot of my time. And honestly, I need to focus on myself for a little while. But currently, people can find me on Twitter as Carlos QC, C-A-R-L-O-S, Q as in Queen, C as in Camila. And from there, you can go to my blog, you can go to all my Facebook, YouTube links, and just go to Twitter and find me there. And I'll be happy to get in touch with anyone who wants to learn more about the things I do. And thanks so much, Abiyomi, again, and we will stay in touch.
Okay, muchas gracias. Yeah, when we first started warming up before we came in, you were mentioning something about Occupy, because I asked you, since you're a resident in D.C., and even though I believe the movement started Well, Lisa Sparkbrough started in New York City, in the financial capital there.
Let me first introduce myself to your audience. I am originally from Peru. I am a person of indigenous heritage. As many people in Peru, I believe I have also African ancestry and, of course, European ancestry. But I value my native roots because that's how I was raised. That's how I learned to appreciate my culture. And I also consider myself a good spirit person, which is a concept of native people of North America, as you know. And currently I'm going through a process of transitioning from male to female. Although I was named Carlos by my parents, I'm planning on using the name Camila in the future. And yes, we definitely can start talking about the Occupy movement, which in DC basically it has slowed down like in most of the country. I think the Occupy movement has been repressed by this government in a way that is really hard for them to continue taking actions and organizing protests. I have a theory about the Occupy movement, which is, you know, something that I also heard from other people, that it was probably promoted and co-organized by people who work for the current Obama administration. I am not making this as a complete truth. I'm not making these statements as complete truth. I don't know for sure, but that's my personal perception, and it's something that I talked about it with a few people that I know who also witnessed the movement. I traveled to New York as soon as the movement started, just to witness. I recorded some videos, I talked to people. I was there in the third week of the movement in Wall Street. And what I noticed is that there were a lot of people who had, you know, a very good level of skills on how to organize people, how to implement technology, especially online. And there were people that came, some of them came from Europe. In DC, I met a guy who came from Egypt, who was part of the initial movement that promoted the end of the Mubarak regime. And I was reading about these people, and I found links between these activists, quote mark, and the current Obama administration and the State Department. I don't have proof of this to show, but it's something that always crossed my mind, how the Occupy movement was allowed to start occupying public space with so much freedom at first. And once it grew and it became so strong, and that's when the government started the repression. It looked to me like this movement was some sort of catharsis, some way of release of the huge disappointment that progressives in this country had about the current president and his betrayal to the people of the United States. So if you look at the whole movement, it sort of, you know, helped for the current administration to avoid massive protests when the whole movement started growing and it became dangerous to the status quo. That's when we saw the police brutality, raiding the occupied camps across the country. And the last camp was cleared up last week in Washington, D.C. So to respond to your question, the Occupy movement in D.C. is currently going on, but it's mostly happening in small groups. I think they are meeting somewhere. I am not participating actively of these meetings. But that's the perception I have. I hope I'm mistaken, but I believe the Obama administration has something to do with the Occupy movement, the same way that corporations had something to do with the Tea Party movement, it's sort of helping manipulating the frustrations of the people of this country.
Okay, so I mean, yeah, those are some differing views that we really are not hearing in the mainstream, especially even in terms, I haven't heard anything like this in terms of the Occupy media. And I've been monitoring what's been coming, you know, going around the country, especially through Twitter, which seems to be the best way to follow this movement in terms of the new citizen media that's been generated behind this. And you know, in speaking of this, you know, censorship has been one of the questions that's been going on with Occupy, and you alluded to that. I remember one point when you were on Blogger when I first learned about you, and you were censored, and you moved over to WordPress from there. Yeah, could you talk about that a little bit? Well, in terms of censorship.
I've been doing social media since 2006, and I faced censorship in different levels, you know, in YouTube and Blogger, which both are part of Google. And, you know, they deleted my YouTube channels. They deleted my blog. They never replaced my YouTube channel, so I had to open new channels and repost several videos. My blogs were replaced after I protest, and a lot of my readers actually talked about it online. So I was never given an explanation what happened to my blog, so I moved to WordPress. But I did not like it. I was used to work on Blogger, and Blogger has improved its platform so much that I just decided to continue in Blogger. WordPress, it's a very good, you know, website for blogging, but it also has a lot of advertising that is not under my control, and I really don't like when I see my blog and I see advertising that has nothing to do with the content I'm trying to promote. So basically I decided to go back to Blogger because it's a good platform, and I understood that probably Google censored my blogs after people who don't like what I write probably contact them asking to delete my blog. So it's over. I moved on, and you know, censorship is always there. I get threats all the time, especially people here who are anti-immigrants, who are white supremacists, who are homophobic people, who send messages, you know, threatening in all kinds of ways. And in Peru, in South America, people who are racist, homophobic, who are right-wing, you know, fanatics who really don't like the things I do because, you know, knowledge is a powerful thing, and me, by sharing my ideas and creating debates that are necessary, it can be considered dangerous for societies where most of the people are living in silence. You know, there is no freedom of speech or media in most of Latin American countries, especially in Peru, where only the rich and the powerful can express their voice and the majority of the people are basically silenced.
Mm. Now, that leads to my next question about immigration. Now, there are many layers to this that a lot of people are not, you know, they're not really asking too many questions about. Like, for one, you know, the Obama administration, even though they have an office for Latin American affairs and immigration affairs, and I mean, so many different liaisons that are official between the White House and the Spanish-speaking community in the United States. But when it comes to immigration, Spanish-speaking immigrants have never been rounded up to this level before. Now, there were two incidences in the past, one in the 1930s, I believe, and one in the 1940s, where Mexicans were simply rounded up, sometimes on their way home from work, and they were placed on trains and buses and just dropped on the other side of the Rio Grande. Now we have a system of black sites and private prisons that need to have themselves filled in order to make a profit. And again, they're looking for any reason to take immigrants, recent immigrants, long-term immigrants, again, provided that they speak Spanish, provided that they're not European, because there are Irish immigrants, there are Boer immigrants in South Africa that are not getting this type of pressure. Not to say that they're not looking at them, but they're not receiving this type of pressure. You know, as someone who was not born in the United States, again, living in the heart of the beast in Washington, D.C., how do you view this? You know, especially as someone who is from Latin America, but you're surrounded by people from who are from around the world who may or may not be undocumented.
Well, living in Washington, D.C. Gives me a safer environment when it comes to being an immigrant, a Spanish-speaking immigrant of indigenous heritage, but also being undocumented. As you might know, I, you know, came out as an undocumented immigrant in my blog, and that sort of helped me, because I do social media that a lot of people in the government in Washington D.C. appreciate. I am apolitical. I don't promote political agenda of either the Democratic or the Republican Party. I'm very independent. I don't have any aspirations to follow a career in the politics in this country. So I usually speak my mind, and that's something that, you know, people from both sides have learned to appreciate, and I feel protected in some way. But I feel really, really bad about other immigrants who are in other parts of the country, in the states like Alabama, Georgia, Arizona, Mississippi, Florida. It's really, really sad what's happening across the country. Entire families are being divided. People are being incarcerated, and children are being left parentless and put on foster care. And most of these new immigrants, quote mark immigrants, are indigenous peoples that are coming to the U.S. As a friend of mine who is a native activist here in Maryland told me, it's part of a prophecy of the reunification of native peoples, the encounter of the condor with the eagle. Native peoples are repopulating this land. But we are seen as Hispanics, as European descendants completely, but that's another topic. What I wanted to say, responding to your question, is I view these anti-immigrant actions by the Obama administration as a result of the power of corporations and the influence of money that has taken over democracy in the United States, and especially the government, the federal government. It's all about money. It's all about racism. It's all about rich white people who want to keep a country that where they still have the privileges. And when they see these newcomers creating entire communities with different value, different traditions, and different skin color, they feel threatened. So the way how they are trying to get rid of us is you know, is by making money out of this. The prison industry is highly connected to the war machine, and big donors of the Obama administration and also the Republican Party. So, to me, this is something that has been planned for years. So regardless who is in power, either Democrats or Republicans, this is going to continue happening. Unless, you know, the people of the United States and human rights activists continue protesting. I believe that this could be a worse humanitarian crisis were not for different organizations, politicians, and progressive activists who have stood up in defense of the rights of indigenous peoples and immigrants in the United States. But honestly, it's a huge disappointment. The Democratic Party has used Latinos in order to get President Obama into the White House, but secretly they have deported thousands of people, more than any other administration in U.S. history. But before deporting undocumented workers, they put them in prisons, which is a big business, as you may know. Currently, because of the elections, they have a slowdown in incarcerations and deportations, but it's known that the Department of Homeland Security is already hiring. This is about corporate greediness and racism, and I believe this is going to continue after the November elections if President Obama is reelected.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break so stations may identify themselves. So we're speaking with Carlos in D.C., and when we come back, we're going to go further into the immigration question, but where I want to go with this is now in terms of how does the immigration issue, question, what have you, especially in terms of detention, how does this deal when it comes to people who are homosexual or who identify as transgender? It's an issue that we're not really discussing, and those of you who are familiar with American news media might remember a very harrowing story that came through. I can't remember the sister's name, but she was abused by the detention staff in the immigration detention, and when she reported the abuse got worse. And she was repeatedly assaulted while she was in detention. And this is a human rights violation that if it were happening in Syria or some other country that the capitalists were looking to initiate some sort of an action against, they would be calling this a crime against humanity. But we're talking about this happening right here in the United States. It is the Angry Indian, and you are listening to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
What are you supposed to think? And what are you supposed to do? When Don't let the colonial occupation blues get you down. Listen to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The podcast for intelligent aboriginals.
Hello, I'm Carol Warden. The Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center asked for your help in spreading awareness of the National Public Awareness Campaign for the availability of Plan B within Indian Health Service. Plan B is an emergency contraceptive that is routinely denied to Native women at IHS facilities. Although Plan B has been available without a prescription for adult women since 2006 and as of 2009 available to women age 17 and up, it is still not provided over-the-counter at 90% of IHS pharmacies. Our goal is to ensure that Plan B is available as an over-the-counter contraceptive for all Native women and to incorporate access to Plan B into standardized sexual assault policies within IHS. We also seek to inform Native women of their right to Plan B so that they are able to make informed decisions regarding their reproductive health. Please help us get the word out. Native women are entitled to the same level of health care as all other women. This message is brought to you by the Native American Women's Health Education Resource Center.
Este es Radio Insurgente, voz del Ejército Zapatista de Liberación Nacional, transmitiendo desde las montañas del sureste mexicano.
This is Cindy Sheehan. George Bush, Dick Cheney, and others launched a war that took my son's life. Strong evidence suggests that in promoting the war, they lied to Congress and the American people, and that in conducting the war, they have targeted civilians, hospitals, and journalists, used illegal weapons, imprisoned without charge, tortured and spied on Americans without court approval. When Richard Nixon abused power, Congress held a serious bipartisan investigation that resulted in articles of impeachment. Ask your Congress member to begin impeachment proceedings against George Bush and Dick Cheney.
Sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.org.
You're curious or confused? Get information or a pamphlet at most pharmacies or a health clinic. If you need help, see a doctor.
Hello, I am Susan Aglukkaq. The North has the highest incidence of sexually transmitted diseases, STDs, in the country. We also have a high rate of teenage pregnancies. High-risk behaviors, unprotected sex, lead to the spread of HIV/AIDS. It can be prevented. Learn the ways to protect yourself and others. Knowledge is power.
I'm Cory Doctorow, and you're listening to a Creative Commons licensed podcast, Some Rights Reserved.
You are listening to the Angry Indian on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
My name is Gordon Hill. I'm from the Kwakwaka'wakw Nation in northwest coast of so-called British Columbia, Canada, and you're listening to Radio Intelligent Indigenous.
Joe is in Indianapolis listening on XM. Hi, Joe.
Hey, big guy. How you doing?
I'm all right. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. Look at here. Can I ask a question here?
Sure.
If anyone that disagree with you, would they all be considered right-wing conservatives?
Not all. Because I have I have a lot of liberals, a lot of Democrats who disagree with me.
Yeah, because I'm not part of any party, but I just happen to agree with the other caller that called you previously.
Agree with him about what?
Well, I think the issue he was trying to make is that children aren't necessary. And I know I was one of those kids, so I speak from experience.
Are you gay?
Oh, absolutely not, but my parent was.
And what happened? Did it ruin you?
Well, in a sense, yeah, it did.
How did it ruin you?
Well, and I'm talking about as a kid. I'm not talking about as an adult.
How did it ruin you? How did it ruin you as a kid?
Well, I had to defend my parents' sexual preferences.
Wait a minute. This is the same guy, right?
Yeah, right.
You're the same guy that said he was calling from Chicago, aren't you?
I'm from Indianapolis, bro.
You're Mark, aren't you?
My name is Joe.
Yeah, well, why did you use Mark when you called a minute ago? Oh, you hung up now. That was blue. Yeah, I never would have guessed you were the same person. Wow, you really disguised your voice good there, dude. Look, man, apparently you have some problems, Mark or Joe or Ralph or Pete or whatever your name is. You know, it's clear. It's obvious you got some problems. So rather than call a left-wing talk show host, why don't you go get some help to work out your problems? You know, you're not going to get any sympathy from me. You're not going to get any empathy from me. You're not even going to get any understanding from me. You're not going to get anything from me, Mark Joe, except a figurative kick in your ass. So go get some help. Go get a therapist. Go talk to your priest. I don't know. Whatever you want to do.
You are listening to the Angry Indian Unintelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Welcome along. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome back. We are again transmitting to the people of the fourth world from within occupied North America, and we're speaking with Carlos in DC, and we're talking about immigration, we're talking about gender, and we're just talking about why do things have to be this way, and why is capitalism not being discussed when it comes to discussing bias, when it comes to discussing colonialism, when it comes to discussing even something as seemingly unrelated as gender bias. You know, ask the women in capitalist countries how they really viewed, and then what advances that they have made, how much activism was involved in that. You know, these things, you know, the United States did not come this way. It was forged this way by descent. You know, even though they don't want you to know that, that's the reality of things. And we're going to bring Carlos back in, and we're going to discuss, you know, immigration again. And in this case, you know, what happens when someone is, say, going through transition, or maybe they've already transitioned and they're living as a male to female, and you have your original ID, say, maybe even your original green card, and your original driver's license, and for what have you, from a sense of fear, not understanding what you should do, from not having a guide, you don't get these things changed. You don't get them updated. Or perhaps you even went to update them and you received prejudice and resistance and you were reluctant to go back. I'm saying this because I've known people that have gone through this. And, you know, at that time, they weren't having to deal with, say, the border patrol. So now you imagine someone like that who has transitioned, and now they're running into the border patrol that either doesn't understand or doesn't care about what this human being may be going through. And instead of trying to work along with this individual to identify or to secure that the identification, it then escalates into an issue of prejudice. And Carlos, you know, what are we to what are we to think, and how should we start analyzing and addressing this type of situation when it comes to immigration and when it comes to gender issues, And in terms of sexual orientation, when someone is dealing with immigration authorities and they have these issues that may be used against them in terms of not what the written law is saying, but how people deal with each other on a day-to-day basis in terms of bias.
Sure. The current immigration laws do not have many provisions to respect sexual diversity of the immigrant population. There is not provisions to protect transgender people, for instance. What has been happening is that many transgender undocumented immigrants were placed in detention center, but they were isolated from the rest of the prison population, quote mark, in order to protect them. But this has created many issues with the mental health of these immigrants. There has been cases of suicide attempts. I know people who work with transgender people in Washington, D.C., and they get phone calls from detention centers from women, transgender women, who are trying to kill themselves because they cannot possibly live isolated for so long, and being harassed sometimes by the detention center staff members even. And when it comes to LGBT rights for immigrants, there are groups in Washington, D.C. who are working in order to include, to have LGBT rights included in any immigration reform that might happen in the next administration if President Obama is reelected. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
So there are, you know, hopes that this can happen in the future, but as currently, there are not any special protections or different legislation that consider LGBT immigrants. For instance, one of the ways to get citizenship for heterosexual people is to get married to a U.S. citizen. This is the most common way for immigrants to get legal residency. Many times this has been used as ways to commit fraud, especially when there is money involved. But most of the time these are true love stories of people who create new families, immigrants who marry U.S. citizens, and they become legal residents. This cannot happen for same-sex couples. This is not happening. And many activists, LGBT and queer activists, are pushing for any so that if same-sex marriage becomes legalized by the federal government in the near future, that it will include special provisions that would include same-sex binational couples, which means gay and lesbian or transgender couples who are made of one U.S. citizen and one immigrant. That's in the future. That's all, something that is being worked on, but there's nothing currently that as an immigrant who is a transgender person will protect me. Now, there's cases of political asylum that transgender people have a higher possibility to get approved, especially when immigrants come from countries where transgender people are facing violence and even death. So that exists. There's a higher probability for a transgender person to get political asylum in the United States, but there's such a high demand currently. For what I hear from these transgender activists in Washington, D.C., that a lot of cases are being put on hold for years. So trans people who come from other countries to the United States have to live in a condition of second-class citizens, not only because of our gender identification, but also because of our immigration status. That's all I can say about this currently. Personally, living my life as a gay man in the first years when I migrated to this country, I didn't feel like I was having any special protection. I am, you know, an immigrant first and foremost in front of the law of this country. So sexuality has never been an issue. Now that I am in the process of transition to become a transgender woman, I believe there will be more resources for me to legalize my immigration status. But that's not the first concern. That's not the reason why I am transitioning. As I wrote in my blog, Carlos in DC, I'm doing this because of me or because of my life. Even if I get deported from the United States, I will continue this process wherever I go. So I don't know if that responds to your question.
No, well, it's a response. I mean, it's a personal response, you know. I mean, one of the reasons why, you know, I wanted to talk about this is, you know, just to put immigration aside for a moment and say, again, move up to questions of gender and questions of human rights and just human dignity and decency. We have the case of Krishan, I believe that's how it's pronounced, Krishan C.C. McDonald, African transgender woman in the United States who was sentenced to 41 months in prison for defending herself against an unprovoked a physical attack that left one of her attackers dead. She was with four people, I believe, and they were attacked by some people who were in a vehicle who then got out and started physically coming at them. And she used some shears that were in her purse to defend herself against this aggressive crowd, and they were using racist and homophobic slurs. They were standing outside of a gay bar. This was in Minnesota in the United States, and they're sentencing her to a male prison on top of the fact that she, you know, in terms of when we look at the Trayvon Martin case and George Zimmerman, and you have another case in Texas, this whole stand your ground thing. This was a case where she was defending herself. Didn't have a chance to run from what we understand. But being African, being transgendered, and having all of the negativity that comes down on someone who identifies as both of these underdogs in North American and Anglophone society, and to see what is happening to her. And where I'm going with this is, the African media in the United States has not defended this person. The gay press has come out for her, which we all know was for the most part Europocentric. But the African media, in terms of a human rights issue, in terms of a bias issue, in terms of a black person being dogged out by the state issue, who was attacked by a racist issue, and we who identify ourselves as black / African / Afro, what have you, we haven't stood up for this person. And why is that? Because she identifies as transgendered? It's because we look at her in disdain and scorn because of that? You know, and now we have the gay marriage issue, and we have all of this, what's going on? You know, Carlos, you're in D.C., you know, how is it, again, as an immigrant, and as an immigrant who also identifies as African?
Correct that part. I do believe I have African ancestry, but I mostly identify myself as indigenous, as a native person.
Okay.
And in the case of C.C. McDonald, it's obvious, you know, we live in a country that is, you know, run by white supremacists, heterosexual Christians, and in many ways. So just think about a person of color who is part of a sexual minority who faces discrimination even within the black community, mm-hmm. she being a black woman, and she defended herself against a racist white supremacist who tried to attack her. Mm-hmm. Of course, she's gonna lose against the system because that's how things are right now. And a lot of people, you know, see transgender population as lesser people, as something, you know, like we are, you know, people who have problems of identity or problems of mental health. A lot of people don't understand the concept of gender, the concept of sexuality, which are different. A lot of people don't have the right information. So when you hear about cases of violence against transgender people, the first idea that many have is that maybe she was doing something wrong, because the public image of transgender people is usually of sexual workers or people who are doing illegal activities in our communities, because that's the case in many people who are transgender. Sadly, I don't mean to talk down on sexual workers. They are people who I have respect for, because it's an occupation, it's a job. But in conservative societies and communities and homophobic communities, it's seen as something that is not right. So transgender people, especially transgender women, are associated usually with prostitution, with the use of drugs, with violence. So the case of Sissy McDonald hasn't gotten enough attention, because we still live in a transphobic society. And, you know, this is something that a lot of people are working on changing. And I believe the more information there is, the more understanding of the rights of transgender people there would be. You know, something happened yesterday at the U.S. Senate when a transgender person testified for the first time in history of the U.S. Congress. This man, transgender man, who was born as a woman, he testified at the U.S. Senate at a hearing in favor of the ENDA, Employment Non-Discrimination Act, that is being debated at the U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. This activist, who is black, Tyler Broadle, he told his story about how he faced violence and discrimination at work in his community when he was transitioning from woman to male, from female to male. And he is a professional person. He's a man who works in the banking industry, I believe. I think he's an attorney. And in many cases, like Mr. Broadus are out there, of people who make a decent living, who have careers, who are contributing to the society. And as you might know, they live regular lives as heterosexual people, as biological male and woman. And there's nothing wrong against it, but unfortunately, there's other people who believe that they have the right to discriminate us. Personally, I have faced violence when guys think that I am a woman and they approach me in flirtatious way, for instance, and when they realize that I am a biological male, most of the times, they respond kindly. They you know, they apologize and then they move on. And that's because I live in Washington D.C., which is a city where you know, where there's a lot of gay culture. Mm-hmm. But sometimes male respond violently because they feel offended. It's a lot of homophobic men who don't like to doubt their masculinity. So when they are attracted to someone who looks like a female but is actually a male, they get upset and they try to get, you know, direct that anger towards the other person. So that's, you know, usually the case with a lot of people who hate transgender women. are people who doubt their own sexuality. When they see these people who they might find attractive, but just the thought of being a biological male makes them angry. So, you know, it's a lot to do in that field in order to educate people, but things are being done, and I'm optimistic. I think, you know, the whole humanity is changing, not just in the United States. There is an awakening process everywhere, and I believe, you know, no matter how hard things can seem every day for people who are still oppressed, people of color, people, so-called people of color, indigenous people, African people, undocumented immigrants, sexual minorities, women, working class families, I think at the end, there is a process of awakening in the world that at the end is going to benefit everybody. I just think that we need to keep our hopes alive and strong, and every day continue doing what we're doing in order to change this world, little by little, person by person. And I think things are going to be better in the near future.
All right. Well, I definitely hope so. It's been great speaking with you, Carlos, from D.C.
Thank you so much, Abiyomi, for having me in your program, and we will stay in touch.
All right. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. You've been listening to a conversation between myself and Carlos from D.C. All right, everyone. Peace, love, and solidarity. See you again.
Internet radio for smarter originals.
Schooling and education. They talk about healthcare. They talk about all of those things, but not once have any of those candidates tried to directly connect the role that racism, the role that racial discrimination, the role that institutional racial oppression and white privilege play in regard to healthcare, in regard to housing, in regard to schooling, in regard to poverty. It is as if those issues exist in a vacuum and have no relationship to color, have no relationship to race, have no relationship to a history of racial subordination. What does it say about our nation's political process and about our nation's political and social culture that none of these candidates for office has seen fit to tell the American public the following thing, all of which you would think would be campaign issues of some importance, at least to some people, and yet they won't say them? Why is it that none of them mention that it was last year, 2006, not 1996, not 1986, not 1976 or 66, but 2006, which witnessed the highest number of race-based housing discrimination complaints in recorded history? The Fair Housing Act was passed in 1968, the year of my birth, and yet it was not 1968 that witnessed the highest level of discrimination complaints based on race. It was 38 years later, in 2006. What does it say about our culture and the politicians, the choices we have been given for leader of the so-called free world, that none of these candidates sees fit to mention as they talk about healthcare, which subject they do talk about with some regularity? What does it say that none of them have seen fit to mention the research that was published in the American Journal of Public Health in 2004, which had looked at 10 years of excess mortality data for African Americans from 1991 to 2000, looking at the number of black folks who had died above and beyond the number that would have died but for their blackness, in effect, and the social and economic conditions that ascribe and essentially adhere to blackness in this country. And what they found in that study, which received almost no media attention, again, published in an academic journal, not read by the average American, not read by political candidates, read by doctors and people who research the healthcare industry, but that's about it. This study found that between 1991 and 2000, there were almost 1 million black people in this country who died, who would not have died had they merely been white and had the average healthcare quality and access of the typical white person in this country. Had they been living in neighborhoods like white neighborhoods in which the levels of exposure to toxicity had been as low as it is in the typical white neighborhood, as opposed to excess exposure to toxics, pollutants, etc., in black and brown spaces. Almost 1 million excess dead people, in this case, black folks, who wouldn't have died had the system of healthcare access and exposure to toxics been equal between white folks and black folks. How is 1 million dead black people not news? You see, if James Byrd gets dragged to death behind a truck in Jasper, Texas, you will hear about that, and well, you should. If one individual is the victim of a vicious hate crime, you will hear about that, and well, you should. But if nearly 1 million people die, not because of bigotry, not because of hatred, not because of some white supremacist organization, but because of systemic and institutionalized injustice, you will not hear anything. How is it not news, and why are no candidates mentioning that according to the Department of Justice, in a study released in 2004, black and Latino males are 3 times more likely than white males to have their cars stopped and searched for drugs, even though white males are 4.5 times more likely to actually have drugs on us on the occasion when we are stopped? Now think about that.
You can't bring up, one guy sent me a very interesting thing about Barack Obama and race. You can't bring up anything other than that suddenly he's African American. If you start to, you know, delve around the edges of, wait a minute, isn't he mixed race? Weren't we told that last year? Whatever, biracial? Not allowed to say that anymore. Apparently, the mainstream media has dubbed him to be African American.
Yeah, I was driving in today, and I was seeing, because I saw this piece with him on 60 Minutes, and I thought to myself, he's very white in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, gee, can I even say that? Can I even say that without somebody else starting a campaign saying, what does he mean he's very white? He is. He's very white.
When a Muslim without a birth certificate has taken over the White House, you need a good white former junkie to show you the direction that America needs to go in. Beck. It's What's for Demagogue.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
Pues aquí de Mango La Aventura, Radio Bemba, toda la familia ahí que estamos en Europa, estamos ahí con Alto Arizona y con vosotros a muerte para todo lo que sea.
Mi vida va prohibida.
Radio Bemba, Mancha, fuerza y con vosotros siempre.
Radio Intelligente,
the broadcast that works to keep the fourth world informed. Radio Intelligente Rindigena. Internet radio for intelligent aboriginals.